Off the Ball, GAA.
This year I just had a lot of motivation to right the wrongs of last year, because I didn't have a good year last year personally, so that was a big thing for me.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by William Hill. Download the app and play today.
18 plus gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.
Welcome back to Tuesday night's football show. If you've just joined us, we've been speaking to Dan Bardell about Aston Villa and Newcastle and their shared sense of unease and anger and everything else with regards to PSR rules and the Premier League, as was displayed on Saturday. To chat a little bit more about this, I'm delighted to say that Kieran Maguire of the Price of Football podcast is with us on the line. Kieran, how are you doing?
I'm grand. The crazy people in football have made it a busy summer for the likes of me.
It's unbelievable. It must be a constant case of educating people and reminding people about what is actually at play here, because it does feel that new wrinkles develop every summer, every window, and somebody like you is a very important voice in football fans remaining rational and understanding exactly what's at play here and who exactly should I be angry with as a football fan.
Yes, there's a lot of angry fans out there. There's a lot of frustration. I think we live through our football clubs at times too much, which isn't necessarily healthy, but that's never going to change. So trying to get across what the rules are, who's impacting you as an individual club, as a fan base, because sometimes it can be the owner who's using smokescreens. Sometimes it can be the Premier League. Sometimes it can be UEFA. Sometimes it could be because you bought a load of turkeys 2 years ago and you can't get them off the book. So there's a variety of reasons on a club-to-club basis.
It does feel that the Jacob Ramsey story is one that is particularly angering for people, and Newcastle United fans were really on the same page as Villa fans on Saturday as well. The idea of you having a homegrown talent, somebody who is inextricably ours, being a cash cow for, you know, avoiding punishment from the powers that be, you can see how that rankles with a football fan.
Yes, because there's always a slightly stronger bond between a player who has developed through the youth ranks, even though we rarely go to watch the youth team. We always claim we did. It's a bit like I know 10,000 people who claim they're at the Sex Pistols gig in Manchester in 1977, where 200 people attended. So we like to feel that the club is good at development. We like to feel that the player is one of our own, because we've got that geographical and historical link to the club ourselves as fans. And to see this young person being treated as a piece of inventory, and that's what they are. I had a meeting with a fairly senior club in the Premier League, and we were talking through the issues relating to academy development. And they said, off record, can't name the club clearly, I came into this game to help young people become better, and I'm now running a profit centre. And that's what they are. They are profit centres as far as the clubs are concerned, or as far as the club owners are concerned, because we now have these sets of rules from the UEFA, from the Premier League, from the EFL. It doesn't matter what the league is. They tend to be fairly common. And because an academy player didn't physically cost you a transfer fee, if you sell Jacob Ramsey for £40 million, that's £40 million of profit. Whereas if you bought a player, let's say you bought him for £50 million 2 years ago on a five-year contract, you say, well, we're going to reduce the value of the contract by one-fifth each year. So his value after 2 years goes down to 50 to 40 and 30. You sell that player for 40 million, you've only made a £10 million profit. And those players could be of equal stature, equal talent. So the accountants have a lot to blame for here. Which I feel slightly embarrassed about as an accountant.
To what extent does this concern the Premier League, do you think? Or maybe to what extent should it concern the Premier League to the point where the rules might actually change? Like, I'm far from qualified enough to be able to suggest what it could change to or what an outcome might be. But surely those that run the organisation are looking at these sorts of situations, thinking to themselves, this cannot be the way in which you balance the books.
I think there are potential solutions, but none of them will get past the 14 votes. In order to change the manifesto, in order to change the rule book of the Premier League, you need a two-thirds majority. How many clubs are going to vote for it to change the rules to such a way that it reduces their profits? Because some clubs are reliant upon the player trading model, either from their academy. If you take Chelsea, for example, who are absolutely brilliant at it, you know, they've sold Mason Mount, they've sold Conor Gallagher, they've sold Tomori, they've sold Tammy Abrahams. You know, you look at them and they've generated, you know, hundreds upon hundreds of millions. Why vote to make things worse for yourself? And a lot of the clubs will be saying, well, I've not used the academy for the past 3 or 4 years, but yeah, if we do get a couple of good lads coming through, that's our get out of jail free card. So the rules, in my view, are not fit for purpose. I think they encourage bad behaviour in the sense that it incentivises clubs to sell the academy players coming through rather than more senior players. But unless you have a complete rethink of the rules and a complete rethink of how the accountants deal with players, which it can be done, but the trouble is, every time you change the rules, I can guarantee this is what will happen. A smart lawyer and a smart accountant will go into a room together and they will be told, don't come out until you found a loophole. You know, we've seen this with other clubs. Selling naming rights for stadiums that don't exist, selling the women's team to yourself, selling car parks to yourself, signing players on 8-year contracts, whatever it's going to be. The people who are designing the rules, they're smart, but they're up against super smart people whose job it is to get their way around the rules. And all it becomes is an arms race. And it's a pretty depressing football environment when you've got celebrity football accountants and celebrity football lawyers.
And it's important for us to not pretend as if Aston Villa as a club have not tried to do that, or that Newcastle have not tried to do that. They have all absolutely exploited some of the things that you've spoken about there. What's interesting now, I guess, is those people who are put into a room, that they could also be great entrepreneurs or great thinkers, because trying to increase revenue streams is now going to become all important for every football club. Not that it ever was unimportant. But what are we seeing here, Kieran, with regards to inventive ways of increasing revenue streams? Like, I've seen Aston Villa have looked at building a venue close to the ground, and I'm sure a stadium capacity increase would be something that they're looking at in the medium to long term as well.
You're absolutely right. And the TV money isn't growing anymore. If we look at the domestic deal that we've got in the Premier League, it's worth 4% more than it was in 2029 compared to 2017. And the Premier League have had to give away an extra 100 games a season to the broadcasters. So I think there's limited growth there. As far as the sponsors are concerned, you're not allowed gambling sponsors on the front of shirt from next season. I don't think it'll be negative, but it's not going to encourage much further growth. So therefore, getting more money out of fans becomes more and more ingenious. What are we seeing clubs doing? Well, we're seeing clubs getting rid of seniors. Because old people, you know, I'm in my mid-60s, I've got a season ticket. The trouble is, I'm not going to buy a... You know, I'm not going to buy a Bruno Fernandes duvet cover, am I? I'm too old for that type of thing, as far as the merchandise is concerned. So how can we maximise the yield per fan? Well, you don't want season tickets, you don't want old people. So what do you do? Well, when people become seniors, we've seen quite a few clubs drop the discount. It used to be most clubs, you become a senior, they drop the discount, you get 50% off. Now it's down to 25%. You've now got to be 67 instead of 65 before you can get a senior discount. They're kicking out season ticket holders because, and this is no disrespect to, you know, those fans that have been coming from Korea, you know, for the last 4 or 5 years to watch Sonny play. And I go as an away fan, I see loads of them and they're desperate to see him. And every single one of them has got carrier bags full of merchandise from the megastore. Well, they're good money as far as the clubs are concerned. So what we should do from an accountant's point of view, you get rid of the season ticket holders. So when somebody doesn't renew their season ticket, that those tickets now become on open sale. Look what we've seen at Manchester United and Chelsea. They've been kicking the fans out who traditionally have sat quite close to the manager's dugout, because 10 or 20 years ago, it was just another seat. What the clubs are now doing is, let's make it a manager experience. So you get to see Amorim spit his chewing gum out, and I saw it. I'm willing to pay €200 for the privilege instead of the regular £40. So we're seeing clubs becoming really cute in the way that they make it more difficult, I think, for the season ticket holders to renew. They want the individual person to arise. They're very keen on alternative forms of broadcasting. They think that within the next 4 or 5 years, you'll be able to wear one of these headsets and you'll be able to turn to your right. And it's Mickey, your mate, who you normally go to matches with. Well, you can now turn in your lounge and do that. Instead of paying your normal TV subscription, it'll be done on a pay-per-view basis for the immersive experience. So the clubs want to convert the traditional way we watch football into an experience, because they know that we as punters will pay for that privilege.
That also is a further step in the alienation, you could argue, of the local fan. You compound that with the fact that local talents are also being sold at a greater rate and are far more lucrative, and maybe the disassociation of local fans is going to be a consequence of this. You mentioned Manchester United there, and you look at something like their futuristic plan for Old Trafford, the new Old Trafford, as it were, and I must say my initial reflex to seeing the plans last year was, this all seems a little bit ridiculous. But maybe that's just my biased view on Manchester United and how they've been run for the last couple of years. The way you talk about that and the way in which your bricks and mortar assets are being utilised, maybe the Manchester United model of creating a little town basically around your stadium is actually the way in which revenue streams are going to become manipulated and utilised for sporting success.
I think that's a fair observation. Football clubs, when they do relocate, they will try to become the lightning rod. They will become try to become the central hub. I'm going to Everton's new stadium at Bramley Moor Dock on Sunday to see their first match. And the aim is, you're going to have that as your football ground, but you'll have a cinema nearby, you'll have a bowling green nearby, you'll have shops nearby. They want it to be something which is going to drive traffic. We've seen Spurs, in terms of their negotiations with their local government, Spurs can now host more non-football games at White Hart Lane, which I still call it that, than football games. So they've now got a licence to do 30 events where you can get 60,000 people attend. So that's going to be NFL, that's going to be boxing, that's going to be, for heaven's sake, Coldplay. Why one person would want to go and watch Coldplay is beyond me. But 60,000 people will turn up for 7 days. And not only will they turn up, they'll spend a fortune as well, because they up the prices. I saw the prices being charged for the NFL matches, and it was €150, €180 to watch a match between two pretty mediocre teams. But they've still sold out. So I think the clubs are trying to reinvent themselves as part of the entertainment industry, and the stadium is just seen as an entertainment hub through which, yes, you run the football club through it, but you've got all of these other activities as well.
Yeah, and it's kind of a little bit grim that if you want to predict medium-term success, you could just look at the capacity of your stadium as a bit of a signpost. Like, it feels absurd that I'm about to say this, but who is going to have the more successful next few years, Aston Villa or West Ham United? It obviously seems like it's Aston Villa given the players that they have, but West Ham have a bigger stadium and they therefore have more of an ability to tap into revenue streams than a club like Aston Villa does. Same with Newcastle United versus Aston Villa. Newcastle United with a much bigger stadium. Like, I know I'm making a very basic point there, but it's going to become even more important because this has not actually allowed clubs to enter into a Premier League season on an even footing. It's just compounded the inequalities that already exist. And one of those inequalities is, how much can you make on match day?
It is. And also, I think some clubs are on the wrong side of history, because if you look at what's happened at Chelsea, I've got the number of points that Chelsea were behind the winners of the Premier League in each of the seasons prior to Roman Abramovich arriving. Yeah, Chelsea have always been a decent side, but they were 15, they were 23, they were 26 points behind. They never had a chance. They were never in the running to win the Premier League. Abramovich comes in. He's got 50 euro notes being fired left, right and centre, and all of a sudden they become a success. They lost a fortune. It cost Roman Abramovich 1.1 million euro a week for 19 years to run Chelsea Football Club. And for that, he got a free programme and a car park space. You know, and that was the crazy numbers involved. Manchester City, they were acquired in 2008. Well, we had no financial fair play in 2008. So a couple of years later, Manchester City lost 220 million euro in a single season. Didn't matter. There was no FFP. There was no PSR. There was no SCR. There were no weirdos like me on the radio and the television every 5 minutes. It was a completely different environment. And now you've got Newcastle and Aston Villa. Newcastle are owned by Saudi Arabian Public Investment Fund. Okay, it's got limitless money if it wanted to spend. Aston Villa has got Naz and Wes as the two owners. Naz is the most is the most rich person in Egypt. Wes himself is a multi-billionaire. If they want to put money in, they are constrained by a set of rules because the guillotine came down in 2013. If you invested before then, you could do what you want. If you invest after then, you've now got to go and follow these rules.
The John Giles era with Off the Ball has come to an emotional end.
Off the Ball wouldn't exist the way it does without the existence of John Giles.
Helped by a plethora of John's friends and family within and without football, we pay tribute to the great man in front of a selected audience.
So we are here tonight to celebrate not just the impact John has had on Off the Ball over the last 20 years or so, but really the unrivaled impact that he's had on Irish football going back 70 years.
This week in the OTB football feed, look out for the full John Giles tribute night.
If we didn't say John was the best player we've ever played with, he would tell you why he was.
Eddie, I might come to that in a minute. Yeah.
We speak to John himself about his 7 decades in football, former Leeds teammates Eddie Gray and Joe Jordan, plus tributes from Liam Brady, Brian Kerr and many more.
As you say, it's what, 20 odd?
23 years.
20 years. Well, they did well to put up with me for 20 years.
Released in 3 parts, we'll drop the first part of the John Giles tribute night on Tuesday morning. And to mark the occasion, it will be available for free for a limited time only. The John Giles tribute, only available in your OTB football feed.
On the transfer window that we are currently witnessing at the moment, Kieran, it's going to be another record-breaking summer. So when you talk about revenue streams such as television money perhaps not growing, it doesn't seem to be stopping the growth of these transfer window records. Do you expect a record to be set maybe this year or next year and that record to not be broken again? Granted, I realise that there is the very obvious point of inflation incorporated here as well, which would mean that the records will forever be broken. But what's your take on that? Are we still going to see, is this the beginning, I guess, of another string of ridiculous summer windows?
I do anticipate growth, and the reason for that is that we had the expanded UEFA Champions League last season, which meant that you got an extra one or two home games. So yeah, a club like Manchester United or Arsenal, a home game in Europe, that's worth probably 6 million euro. So you do that a couple of times. The prize money offered from UEFA has increased because there is still a genuine fear that Super League could return. So therefore, UEFA's upped its game. We've seen FIFA create the Club World Cup. That was worth 100 million euro to Chelsea. That goes into their pockets. We still have the Saudi Pro League. I know it's not signing huge numbers of players, but if you do manage to shift a player, they tend to pay you fairly high fees. And money circulates. If you get an extra 60 million or 70 million euro from a club in the Saudi Pro League, that allows you to spend 60 or 70 million yourself, and the club you receive that you bought from, they've now got money. And we get into this circularity. If we look at what happened in 2024, we had six clubs in genuine danger of failing the Premier League rules. It was Everton, Villa, Leicester, Forest, Chelsea and Newcastle. So those clubs didn't tend to do much dealings apart from some unusual transactions among themselves. That put the brakes on. We had some clubs that got promoted who didn't spend a lot of money themselves. All of those issues have gone. It's only Villa have been close to breaking the PSR rules. You sell a couple of players, or you've sold a couple of players in the past couple of years. So it's Sunderland have spent well over, 150 million euro. Leeds have spent broadly the same. We've got clubs like Brighton and Brentford spending 100 million because they've sold players in the last couple of years. All of this is increasing, and you create that virtuous circle of spending. It doesn't necessarily increase the overall quality of the product, but it certainly increases the numbers.
Kieran, I'm sure it's a question you get asked more than any other, but given the lack of Champions League revenue this season and given the outrageous summer of spending that they have put down, how come Manchester United are nowhere close to failing these financial rules or actually falling foul of them?
Well, they're Manchester United. They've got the biggest capacity ground in the country. They've got the biggest fan base globally of any Premier League club. What did Manchester United do at the end of the season? Well, they went on a post-season tour and they picked up 10 million euro. They just spent a couple of weeks in the United States. They picked up another 10 to 15 million euro there. Manchester United has got no problems whatsoever when it comes to PSR because they're only spending probably around about 55 euro on wages for every €100 that comes through the door, and actually they're in a fairly strong position. I think a lot of people got fooled because when Jim Ratcliffe says, "Oh, I've got to go and make 400 or 500 members of staff redundant because we're going to go bust by Christmas," people believed him. But anybody that looked at the numbers said, "He's not right. He's winding people up. He's just trying to justify making people redundant because that's what his company Ineos does. Whenever they go anywhere, they make lots of people redundant." He was surprised at the backlash that he got as far as the club was concerned from the fan base. So they brought out this story. It's a myth. Manchester United's finances were never as bad as people made out.
So the net losses figure that comes out comes with a massive health warning.
It does. If you take a look at the last 3 years of United's accounts, they had COVID allowances in 2022 because they couldn't go to China in the summer of 21, which fed into the 22 accounts. They got a 40 million euro allowance for there. When the Glazers sold a chunk of the football club to Ratcliffe, that cost Manchester United 40 million euro, but that money didn't go into the PSR calculations as well. So once you start to nerd out, you know, Manchester United's accounts, 160 pages, nobody in their right mind goes through them line by line, but there's people like me that don't have a right mind who do go through them, and we find these numbers, and you go, yeah, okay, you do the calculations. It's not as bad as people make out. And then you've got this crazy situation under the accounting rules. If I spend 100 million euro on a player on a five-year contract, it costs me 20 million euro a year. So people see the 100 million being spent, but it's only 20 million that impacts upon the profit and therefore impacts upon the PSR. If you take a look at what Manchester United did 12 months ago, they sold Greenwood, they sold McTominay, and they made about 40 million euro because both of those players were academy players. People have got incredibly short memories. And you've got to look at this thing, A, as a whole, and B, over a three-year period, because that's when you're assessed.
It turns out having a bomb squad is actually an amazing thing to have in this day and age in football.
It's if you can shift them, yes. I mean, the problem that Manchester United have got is that they've only got managed to shift Rashford on loan. It looks like Sancho has turned down the opportunity to go to Roma. I think Chelsea are playing a game of blink with Manchester United because they know that Garnacho's in the bomb squad, but nobody else seems interested in him. So you know, if Manchester United want 50 million today, well, if I was Chelsea, I wouldn't bid anything until 11 p.m. on the final day of the window, and they say, tell you what, we'll give you 30 million. Otherwise, you've got an unhappy player. It's costing you a lot of money in terms of wages, and his value is only going to go down because he's in the bomb squad. He's not going to get a first team match, and you know, in 12 months' time, you'd be struggling to get 20 for him. Chelsea play a really canny game, and as far as I'm concerned with Chelsea, you can either hate them or you can hate them. You know, I'm a Brighton fan. We loathe Chelsea, but they are smart.
If Jim Ratcliffe did not create a whole pile of redundancies for existential reasons at Manchester United, why did he do it?
Because he's a bully, because he punches down, because that's how Ineos operate. If you take a look at how much it saved the club, let's take 400 people on €40,000 a year. That comes to €16 million. That's what they're paying Marcus Rashford. But that's less than that. Well, yeah. So you know, it's the equivalent of one player, one dud that they've signed. And if you take a look at Manchester United since Sir Alex retired, with the exception of Bruno Fernandes, which of those players can you honestly say has been good value for money in terms of what they've delivered on the pitch, and therefore, you know, in terms of the wages that they've been paid? It's just the way that Ineos operate. They're an unpleasant bunch.
Pure margins. And like, I mean, in other kind of ways of framing that, it is, you know, the amount of revenue that they'd get from a couple of weeks in the United States or a postseason tour, as is the case. I think sometimes we're maybe a little bit blinded by what's actually happening on the pitch, that we seem that maybe think that everything is a little bit of a clown show behind the scenes. But actually, it's a very cynical, very surgical approach to running a business. That seems to be what Ineos is doing to Manchester United.
That's right. They're treating it in exactly the same way that they teach, that they run the petrochemicals companies within Ineos, and they run them very well. I think the mistake that they've made, and let's face it, they've been there 18 months. They've spent, you know, in excess of €500 million on players. They extended the manager's contract with Ten Hag and then sacked him a couple of months later. They recruited Ashworth and they sacked him a few years later. They got a new chief executive who doesn't seem to be doing that much himself either. It works if you're trying to sell the cheapest product going. Football's a completely different business. Football, you need to have motivated people. And I think there is a bit of a feel-good factor there this summer. There's no doubt about it. And the manager is genuinely a nice guy. But there's an awful lot of people at Old Trafford at present, and this is Old Trafford, who they're wondering if they have some more bad results, does that mean there's going to be another 50 redundancies? Everybody's looking over their shoulder. Everybody's looking for the exit door. You're in danger of losing your good staff as well as the ones that Ineos don't want.
Just to finish up then, and to kind of bring this full circle, I wonder what you suspect Kieran to be the future of UEFA's financial rules, of PSR, and even to kind of bring it back to Aston Villa and seeing their Egyptian owner talking about potentially taking legal action around PSR, trying to raise it from £105 million of losses up to £135 million, I think it was. I'm not sure what that would do. I presume most teams would just come to that limit again after that. But what do you expect to change, if anything, over the next little while with regards to PSR in particular?
I think PSR is a bit of a smokescreen, because the reason why Aston Villa have not been able to spend money isn't to do with the domestic rules, it's to do with the UEFA rules. Because Villa have sold the women's team to themselves. Villa did sell Villa Park to another company, it was about 5 or 6 years ago. Villa have sold players to both Everton and Chelsea, where Chelsea and Everton have sold players to Villa. Now, those are treated as profits for PSR purposes, but they're not allowed to be used under UEFA. Villa's problem is the UEFA rules. And what people aren't cottoning on to, in my view, is that Villa failed the UEFA rules this summer. They were given a fine, and people say, well, it's only an £11 million sterling fine. You know, what's the issue there? But actually, they were also given a business plan. And as part of that business plan, it says, for the next couple of windows, as far as Villa are concerned, you cannot spend more money than you bring in. So from a cash point of view, they sold Jacob Ramsey for 40 million, which allows them to spend 40 million. They can't do that elsewhere. Chelsea, have been absolutely brilliant at selling players. You know, we saw Dewsbury Hall go for, what, 30, 35 to Everton. We've seen other departures as well, and that's allowed Chelsea to buy players. And all of the focus, as always, has been on the incomings at Chelsea, but they don't get enough credit for their ability to generate money from sales.
Because they're in the same situation as Villa with a business plan as well, right?
That's right, and they've got that for a longer time. They were far, far in excess of the allowable limit under UEFA rules. And if you take a look at Chelsea, they showed a profit. I think it was about, you know, probably about 80 million euro for Chelsea Football Club. If you take a look at their parent company, where they've sold all of the properties and the women's team to, that lost around about 300 million. And those are the figures that will be looked at by UEFA. So that's why they've got a far more severe punishment in terms of A, the fine, and B, the length of the business plan.
Fascinating times, to say the least. Kieran Maguire of The Price of Football, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for the invite.